is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We want guys with high character in our program. And so one of the biggest things that I look for when I go talk to a kid, the number one person I want to talk to at their school is the high school janitor, because that person really knows more about their character than probably any principal, any coach, any guidance counselor. So how you treat anybody is how you treat everybody, right? So we want guys in a program that treat people the right way. They're going to put on their best foot forward with people they think can help them, the principal, the AD, the coach. I want to know how you're treating the people that you perceive cannot help you.
Ben Thompson is entering his fourth season as the head men's basketball coach at Emory and Henry College in Emory, Virginia. During his first season in 2019-2020, Thompson guided the Wasps to a berth in the ODAC tournament and won the most league games of any first-year head coach in program history. Prior to his arrival at Emory, Thompson spent three seasons as the head men's basketball coach at SUNY Canton. He left as the all-time winningest Division III coach in program history. In the summer of 2018, Thompson led the USA Division III men's basketball national team on a tour of Brazil. Before SUNY Canton, Thompson helped guide NCAA Division II Lincoln Memorial University to the national championship game in 2015-2016. That year, the Rail Splitters went 34-3, had an undefeated South Atlantic Conference record, and won the SAC tournament and NCAA Division II Southeast region. Thompson also coached at his alma mater, Virginia Tech, where he helped the Hokies reach the NCAA tournament and get multiple NIT appearances. He has previous coaching stints at Virginia Military Institute, where he was named one of the top five assistant coaches in the Southern Conference, as well as stops at UNC Greensboro, UNC Pembroke, and St. Leo University.
Hey Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Chris Meadows, player development coach and author of the book, I Am D1, and you are listening to Hoopheads Podcast.
3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Be sure to jot down some notes as you listen to this episode with Ben Thompson, men's basketball head coach at Emory and Henry College in Emory, Virginia.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to be joined by Ben Thompson, the head men's basketball coach at Emory and Henry University in Emory, Virginia. Ben, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on. Want to look forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Yeah, so my father was actually a high school coach, and one of my first memories was him winning a state championship in 1991, when I guess I was 7 or 8. I guess I hadn't quite turned 8 yet. So that was a cool memory. And then, you know, just growing up, watching basketball with him, being in the gym as a kid, and, you know, being at several camps, it's kind of neat. The first basketball camp I ever attended was actually here at Emory and Henry. And so it's kind of neat to kind of come full circle. But I grew up in a coach's house, and I kind of make the joke, I'm pretty sure that at some point Dad had a basketball in my crib. So, you know, I think, you know, I thought for a while I wanted to be an architect, but came back to basketball pretty quick.
One of those, you got no choice, right?
Yeah, sort
of like,
exactly.
Hey, here it is. It's in your blood. When you think back to being a kid and just growing up in the game and being around your dad, and then you think about yourself as a coach today, what are some things maybe that you learned from watching your dad that you feel are a part of you as a coach that you took from him?
Yeah, I mean, I think just how to treat people. You know, I'd like to think that I treat people, you know, if I could treat people half as well as he did, you know, I'd be doing okay. But just the care that he took for people, and you know, in high school, you know, there's not the rules that you have in college, you know, so he'd go pick guys up and, you know, drop guys off at home, and, you know, he may get back to our home later, but he was making sure that his guys were taken care of. And, you know, just stories of one he told, maybe it may have happened before I was born or I was super little. There was a big blizzard, and Dad had a bunch of guys. This was back when he was an assistant, that wanted to go hoop, and they had canceled school and big blizzard, and Dad had a four-wheel drive truck, and he went through the town and got about eight to 10 guys in the bed of the truck while it's snowing, you know, and they went and they hooped for 2 or 3 hours. And he's like, fellas, I got to get home. You know, but he always took care of people first. You know, and I think sometimes in college basketball, we can get lost in, you know, trying to win championships or, you know, winning games or getting to the tournament or winning a national title. And sometimes we forget that our student athletes are people, you know, they're not means to an end. They're ends in and of themselves. And so, you know, just trying to treat people the right way and trying to do things the right way is probably the biggest thing that I learned from him.
I think that people part of it and that relationship part of it is certainly something that you hear talked about way more in the coaching profession today, probably than when you did when your dad was coaching. It was more, there was more of that Bobby Knight type style of coaching that was certainly more prevalent back then than it is today. And I think that relationship piece has become really critical to being able to connect with your athletes and then get the most out of them. So when you think about how you build those relationships and what you do to invest in your people, not just your basketball players, what does that look like for you on a day-to-day basis as the head coach?
Yeah, we try to take more of an organic, holistic approach to it. You know, so I'm not sitting guys down in my office and asking them, you know, who their girlfriend is or, you know, a bunch of canned questions. We want it to be, you know, as natural as possible. And a lot of that you figure out kind of throughout the recruiting process, who guys are, what makes them tick. One of the cool things that we have here at Emory and Henry is they have this little golf course on campus. And we maybe have one guy that's a good golfer, maybe one. They're all awful. You know what I mean? But they go out there and have the best time and just hang out. I mean, it's super relaxed. There's times where there's 7 or 8 of them playing the same hole together. You know, and so just stuff like that. We try to give our guys experiences. We took our team to the Barclays Center last year and toured New York, toured New York City, and we're taking them to Puerto Rico this year. You know, we're going to play in the NBA arena in Charlotte next season, in Washington, D.C. the following season. We're going to take a foreign tour. So some of it to me is giving them experiences that they'll never have. You know, we've got a guy on our team whose brother played at a Division I school and never once played in the NBA arena or did a foreign tour. You know, and he's, you know, we were D3, now D2. You know, he might have gone to a quote unquote lower level, but he's going to get to go to, you know, Puerto Rico, and he's going to play in NBA arenas. You know, so at the end of the day, his brother went Division I. He came here when we were D3, now we're D2. He may have a better experience than his brother did. And so to kind of circle back, I think part of it is giving our guys experiences that they'll never forget. And then along the way, when you go through experiences like that and you go through different trips and different opportunities, I think it bonds you as a family. And so we try to take more of an experiential approach and just getting to know our guys more so on a daily basis and have it happen organically than, you know, just sit in my office and I've got 12 questions I want to ask you and, you know, taking notes and, you know, writing it in their contact. This is their girlfriend. This is, you know, their major. This is their interest or whatever. We just try to do it kind of more of like a family holistic approach. You just kind of learn about people as you go and as you go through things together. And so that's just kind of how we do it.
It's building a real relationship just like you would in the real world, as opposed to trying to sit down and have a formal interview process to learn all those things. You're really getting to know your guys. And you mentioned about recruiting and talking about how that process really starts for you in the recruiting process. And I know one of the things that we've talked to a lot of coaches at different levels, but specifically a lot of Division III coaches, just about what you mentioned in terms of the experience and having your guys that you're recruiting, first of all, finding them the right fit, but then also helping to educate them about what the experience can be like, because we all know that what's out there on social media and what people are hearing all the time. And when you're out on the AAU circuit, of course, everybody fantasizes and wants to play Division I basketball. And yet you talk to so many people at so many different levels. And I think that there's a lack of understanding and knowledge of how good basketball is. So just maybe talk a little bit about how in the recruiting process, you have to, for lack of a better way of saying it, educate players and their parents about what the experience can be like when they get to a school like Emory and Henry.
Yeah, so we were Division III for a really long time. And then last year was our first year as Division II. And then this year is our second year at Division II, and we're going into the SAC. And so, you know, at Division III, it's kind of the same pitch. You know, you obviously can't give full scholarships, and, you know, kids are having to pay a lot of money. At Division II, you know, the pitch is a little different, you know, because you can give full scholarships potentially. You know, and so for us, the league that we're going into, the SAC, is really a Division I conference that masquerades itself at the Division II level. And so one of the issues we're having now, we had a pretty good year last year. We reached out to over 100 programs, Division I wise, and only two would play us.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, a lot of people at the low major and low major D1 and high major D2 level, you know, understand that in some cases there are better leagues at the D2 level than there are at the Division I level and better programs and stuff like that. And so, you know, the same is true for D3 and D2. It kind of melds together. You know, the bottom, you know, 100 of Division I and the top 100 of Division II are pretty much the same level. You know, the bottom 100 of Division II and the top probably 50 of Division III is probably, you know, about the same level. And so, you know, the public doesn't understand that, and that's okay. You know, but I would just encourage people to watch games. You can't assume, you know, that just because something is Division I, Division II, Division III, doesn't mean that it's necessarily a better level. In some cases, it obviously is. You know, and you know, I don't know if this is a great analogy, but you know, one of my favorite things to eat, you know, is incredibly unhealthy, but is a big fat juicy cheeseburger, right? Okay. So,
yep.
Kind of an analogy that I make is I can go out to a really expensive restaurant and buy a burger that's going to cost me $40, but that doesn't mean that the burger at Outback is any less. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
In some ways, the burger at Outback is a lot better than the one that cost me $40, right? Hopefully, Outback will reach out and I can do a sponsorship.
There you
for
go.
Them
That's
now.
It. But, let's do it.
But, you know, just because it's quote unquote perceived to be a higher level or something that you're quote unquote paying more for doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right fit or doesn't necessarily mean that it actually is better. And so, you know, we get caught up in the media frenzy of everything. You know, I think we've learned over the last, you know, not to get too political, but I think we've learned over the last decade or so then sometimes we got to do our own research, right? And so the what the media tells us isn't always, you know, the best thing at times. And so whether you're watching all Division One games on ESPN or, you know, you're watching D2, D3, NAIA, JUCO, I mean, there's all types of levels. And there are really good players at all kinds of levels. You know, there's division, you know, there's a D2 guy that played in the NBA Finals last year for the Celtics. You know, how many guys never get that opportunity that played at Division One? Or, you know, there's a Division Three guy that played for the Miami Heat, you know, last year. And so, you know, there are Division Two and Division Three guys that are just as good as Division One and NBA players. But sometimes that level gets forgotten. So, yeah, I think just trying to educate yourselves on the level of basketball, you know, it can be a really good thing. And not to belabor the point, but I was coaching a Division II school in North Carolina a few years ago, and we were recruiting a kid in the area, and we knew one of the high school coaches, and so they brought their entire team to the game. And so his teammates had kind of been giving him a hard time, like, why would you go to Division II? You know, you really should be going to Division I. You know, you're a high major guy, you know, like all this stuff. And so they came to the game, they watched the game, and their coach gets back on the bus at the end of the game. And he goes, okay, how many of you guys can play at this level? Because they all thought they could.
Right.
And he was the only one on the bus that raised his hand. And so it was an educational thing for them. They're like, man, I didn't realize these guys were this good, right? And so I think a lot of it is just people just don't know and don't understand. And so I think the more basketball people watch at all levels, not just what's on ESPN, I think can be a benefit for everybody in trying to understand just how good those levels are and how good the experiences can be.
Absolutely. I think when you start talking about high school players and high school parents, and obviously they're the people that are making the decision ultimately about where they're going to go to school, you start asking them or talking to them about, hey, have you ever seen a Division III game? Have you ever seen a Division II game? And I'd say probably 80% of the players that I talk to have never been to a Division III game, a Division II game. And then once they go and you watch that level of play, and it would be even better, probably even more eye-opening if you could get some high school players into an open gym to play against the D2 and D3 players. And then you'd very, very quickly find that, wow, this is a completely different level of basketball than what I think the perception is. And so that's one of the things that I know we've tried to do here on the podcast, is just make sure that we're trying to help people to understand, look, the level of basketball, no matter where you are, if you're playing college basketball, you're a heck of a player. And that's just, you can't take that lightly as a high school player. And so when you're out there and you're doing your recruiting, what are some things? Obviously, there's a requisite level of talent that a player needs to be able to have in order to play at the level where you guys are at. But when you think about some of the intangibles or some of the things that maybe you look for that you know are going to help a player to succeed in your program with you as a head coach, what are some of those things that you look for?
Yeah, for us, I mean, you know, there's got to be a certain talent level, right? Like, you really, to play in the league that we're in now, the SAC and Division II, you've really got to be a Division I level guy. Now, you can be slipping through the cracks for whatever reason based on height, or you got a funky shot, or, you know, your parents are in the military and you've been to four high schools in 4 years and it's not your fault. You know, like, different things like that are potential reasons why someone might not be at the Division I level, or they're, you know, more slender, you know, and they're not, you know, body wise, they don't look, you know, like an NFL wide receiver, you know, you're not jacked, or maybe they're a little overweight, or, you know, so whatever the reason is, the talent level's got to be there. So, you know, you kind of have to be a Division I level ish type guy. But to your point about the intangibles, some of the things that we look for, you know, are guys sprinting and running the floor, or are they jogging back? Are guys communicating? And for us, communicating, just like as a college coach, our version of being in shape and our players' version of being in shape are two different things, right?
For sure.
And so what players may think is appropriate communication-wise on the court is not for us. I mean, you get into some of these gyms that have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. We talk to our guys about being early, loud, and often with communication. If you're not communicating, I mean, you can't send a meme or a text message to a guy. You know what I mean? Like, you got to shout it out. You got to be early, loud, and often. You got to let guys know what's going on. And if you're not, you got no chance of communicating defensively. So I think how guys run the floor, I think how guys communicate. And then for me, a big, 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 big thing is body language. There's so many languages throughout the world, but body language is the one that everybody understands. You know when somebody's happy, you know when somebody's sad, you know when somebody's hurt, you know when somebody's frustrated, disappointed, mad, angry. Like, those things go across every continent, right? And so for us, we want guys, you know, not that somebody's never going to have a bad day, but are you a guy that's barking back to a coach? Are you a guy that's barking back at officials? You know, are you a guy that's being demonstrative with your teammates? Or, you know, when you miss a shot, you know, it looks like, you know, your dog just died, or, you know, your world is ending. Or when you get taken out, you know, what is your body language on the bench when you get taken out, when something goes right? Are you a front runner? Like, you're into it when things are going right, and then you're the first guy to deflate when things aren't going right. And so the body language piece is really big for us. And what I've found over the years is, you know, to a certain degree, skill sets can be taught. It's really hard to get someone from being, from having bad body language to having good body language. That's one of the hardest things as a coach. And so, you know, innately, you know, you can move the needle a little bit, but innately someone either has good body language or they don't. That's big for us. And then I tell people this all the time at our elite camps when I'm recruiting. The character piece is really important. And a lot of times the body language can help us determine some of that. But the body language is big, and character is big. You know, we're a family here. Our hashtag is the family. Nike, you know, I'm wearing it right now, has, gave us our own family logo. My family's around a lot. I've got a 2-year-old son and a 6-month-old daughter. My wife's around. You know, and so we want guys with high character in our program. And so one of the biggest things that I look for when I go talk to a kid, the number one person I want to talk to at their school is the high school janitor, because that person really knows more about their character than probably any principal, any coach, any guidance counselor. And this is kind of the analogy that I make. And all of us were in high school, so let's not be naive about the thing. If kids are in a group and they're talking about things they shouldn't be talking about, and a principal or a coach walks by, what normally happens?
Yeah, it all shuts down.
It shuts down. But if it's a janitor or someone that they don't perceive, now this isn't true, but it's, they don't necessarily perceive the janitor to be someone that can help them get where they want to go. So how you treat everybody is how you treat anybody. Or how you treat anybody is how you treat everybody, right? So we want guys in a program that treat people the right way. You know, some people don't necessarily perceive a janitor to be someone that can help them earn a scholarship. But that's the exact right person that I want to talk to. You know, they're going to put on their best foot forward, you know, with people they think can help them. The principal, the AD, the coach, you know, all those types of things. I want to know how you're treating the people that you perceive cannot help you. And so, you know, if the janitor, custodian, cafeteria workers, grounds crews, if those people tell me that somebody's a good kid and that they treat people the right way, then in most cases, they're a pretty good kid and they treat people the right way. And so those are just some of the things that we look for.
Yeah, that character piece, I think, is really huge when you start talking about guys that you're going to be around for 4 years and that you're going to be coaching and working with, and they're going to be around your family and you're going to count on them to bring their best every single day. That character piece to me is a huge part of building a good program at whatever level it is that you have. And obviously in college, as opposed to high school, you have some ability to be able to recruit and do that, start that process in the recruiting and bring in the kind of guys that you want. When you're out on the road and you're looking at players, how much do you weigh AAU versus high school? Do you prefer watching a player in one setting or the other? Do you look for different things in each setting? Just how do you balance out looking at a player with their high school team versus with their AAU team?
Yeah, I heard a guy I worked for in the past use this analogy. And so it's kind of, I want a portfolio on a kid, not a photo, right? And so like if somebody's turning in an artwork or, you know, a photography assignment or whatever, you know, a lot of people can draw one painting really well or take a really good picture, right? But can they do it over the course of different venues and different environments and those types of things and different, you know, tools, whether it's acrylics or water paint. And that's kind of maybe a bad analogy, but the portfolio thing is what we look for. So I want to see a kid in AAU. I want to see a kid, you know, with a team, and a lot of times that they don't practice a lot. You know, how do they do in that setting? You know, especially for bigs in AAU, because they rarely get the ball, right? Like it's just how it is, right?
That is so true.
So bigs don't get the ball, and guards over dribble all the time in AAU. And so I want to see how guys handle those situations. And so for us, AAU kind of, you know, there's some really good AAU programs out there. There's some really good AAU coaches out there. But for us, AAU is kind of a more of, you know, kind of an elimination thing. Like, is this kid good enough for us to continue recruiting him? Is his character good enough? Is he a good enough player? It kind of gets guys on the map to some degree. But then we also want to see him with their high school team, you know, at a high school practice, in a showcase, in a workout, excuse me, on campus with our guys. We want to see them in as many settings as possible. And, you know, here at Emory and Henry, it costs $50,000 basically to go to school. So if I'm going to invest $200,000 in somebody, I'm not going to see them play one AAU game and then just go up and offer. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Like I didn't do that with my wife. You know, I didn't see her and just walk up to her and say, hey, you know, I want to spend the rest of my life with you because I've just seen you one time, or we've been on one date, or, you know, and I get some of the stuff that people fall in love first time, whatever. I get all that stuff. But for me, you know, having to kind of be the CEO of our program, is it a good business decision to invest $200,000 into somebody I just watched play for 15 minutes, right? And some coaches are like that. But for us, I feel like to be a good steward of our program, that's not in our best interest. And so I want to see him play multiple AAU games. I want to see him in a showcase. I want to see him in a practice. I want to see him with their high school team. I want to see him on our campus, how they interact with our guys. I think seeing them in as many settings, I mean, not to repeat what I just said, but I want to see them in as many settings as possible to know as much that I can know what I'm getting in a kid before they step on campus.
No, that makes total sense. I think when you start looking at how do you evaluate, the more touch points you have, the better your analysis is going to be. And that being said, still, it's not a perfect science, as we all know. So you continue to just keep working and try to perfect your process. Let's go back in time a little bit, Ben, to earlier in your career. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you learned along the way as you were building your coaching resume as an assistant coach that you feel have served you well now as a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think every person you work for, and sometimes people won't say this part of it. I think every person you work for, you learn stuff that you like, that you would do and you want to keep, and you learn stuff that you don't like and you don't want to do. And so you just kind of discard it. And so I think, you know, working for different people, you kind of take the best nuggets from each one, or what you feel are the best nuggets from each one. And you do your own research and you do your own investigation and into different things on what you want to do. And so, you know, I've learned some good things from every guy that I've worked for, and I've worked for some really good people. You know, and then, you know, you have these ideas of grandeur when you become a head coach and you think you have the world figured out and you know what it's going to be like, and this is just how it's going to be, right? And then you become a head coach and you realize that half of everything you wanted to do just doesn't work or doesn't fit into the time schedule, or, you know, you just have to modify. And so I don't know that I'm quite answering your question, but I just think you try to pick up on different pieces from the different people that you work for. And, you know, maybe one guy has some really good things offensively, but defensively he's not real great. And so, you know, another guy you work for is really good defensively, but offense struggles, you know. And so, you know, not just that. And I think in this day and age, too many coaches, young coaches especially, get so wrapped up in the recruiting piece that in a lot of ways they're not prepared to be a head coach when they become a head coach, because all they've done is just recruit. You know, and so I think as much professional development as you can do, I think, you know, trying to learn from people holistically how they lead a program, you know, it's not just about getting players, right? It's about keeping them. It's about them growing and maturing and getting better. And so I think, you know, some of the things that helped me along the way, and I've had bumps as a head coach, but some of the things that helped me along the way was being able to watch specifically how my bosses ran a program. It goes beyond the X's and O's. It goes beyond recruiting. I mean, at the Division II level, it may be a little higher than this at the Division I level, but at the Division II level, I mean, probably only 25% of my job is actual basketball.
Yeah.
You know, the other 75 is, you know, trying to figure out, you know, you've got on-campus meetings, you've got compliance, you've got the recruiting piece, you've got fundraising, you've got events that you've got to attend, you've got speaking engagements, you've got all these other things, you know, and so can you compartmentalize? Can you put the most important things in front of what needs to get done? You know, can you be interrupted and circle back to something later? Like, there's different pieces and components of running a program that if you only focus on the X's and O's and the recruiting piece, you're going to miss. And you're going to have to learn when you become a head coach. And sometimes guys only get one opportunity to become a head coach because they're trying to figure it out
right
as they go. And then by the time they figure it out, you know, they're no longer a head coach and they may not get that opportunity again. So I think trying to learn, I mean, yeah, the recruiting is important. Obviously, the X's and O's is important. But for all the coaches out there, I think that trying to figure out how to be a CEO of a program and holistically manage everything that comes at you is a piece sometimes that I think gets left in the dark. And so I think the more that guys can work on developing that aspect of it, you know, how do you handle it, you know, when you're 40 minutes into a practice and somebody comes in and says, hey, so-and-so has to sign up for this class, you know, in the next 20 minutes, or they're going to be ineligible, you know what I mean? Or you know, they're not going to be able to practice today. Right. Or, you know, hey, I know that, you know, you're in this meeting, but, you know, campus needs the gym for something and you've got 20 minutes less to practice today, or you've got 30 more minutes to practice today, or you've got a disciplinary issue that comes up, or, hey, you know, I know that, you know, practice ends at 5, but I need you to go to speak at this event at 5:30 and it's 3:00 and you got to come up with, you know, what am I going to speak on? You know, and so there's a lot of things that come at you as a head coach. And so I think trying to prepare yourself, you can't prepare for all of it. I get that. But trying to at least have in your mind some of the things that you want to do and accomplish and how you're going to handle time management, I think can help people who want to become head coaches as well. Yes, it's about recruiting. Yes, it's about X's and O's, but you've got to also be able to manage that program and manage people. And the time management piece is really crucial for that.
So I know and understand that as a head coach, you're constantly growing and learning and trying to improve. But when you think about where you are as a head coach compared to where you were on day one as a head coach, and you think about building your philosophy, and you can take the philosophy, whether you want to say it kind of as that CEO of the entire program, or whether you think about how you wanted your teams to play out on the floor offensively and defensively, how long was it before you felt pretty comfortable with, okay, I've kind of settled into a rhythm here and I have an idea of who I am as a coach and what I want my program to look like. Was that something that you felt like you had a handle on pretty quickly? Is there a moment where you can point to, hey, I figured it out? Or just what's that evolution been like for you?
Yeah, I thought I had it figured out around year three. And then, you know, we had a really good team when I was at SUNY Canton returning, and I got the job at Emory and Henry. And after I left, pretty much our entire team, we had returned almost everybody. They went to the NCAA tournament the year after I left. And so I was happy for those guys. But then I got here and then COVID hit. You know, and so, you know,
so much for philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, no, I mean, I'm much more confident and secure in what I want to do. And the culture piece of our program, that piece, I'm not going to waver on. You know, I think you have to, there's ebbs and flows, excuse me, and you have to adjust. But I think earlier in my career, I was more willing to, oh, well, if this guy is a good enough player, you know, we can, you know, we'll just make him be a better kid, you know, and that doesn't always equate. And so the character piece, you know, I've matured on as something I'm not going to waver on. I'm not as cement as I used to be. Like I used to be, no, we're just going to only play man-to-man defense, right? And so, well, you know, we've got some guys who can't guard a chair at times, right? And so, you know, you're going to have to do some things differently or, you know, so I think being comfortable in adjusting is something that I used to be uncomfortable with. And so I think that's helped me grow. I think one of the things I did early on that I made mistakes on is I tried to schedule like as hard of games as possible. And there's a time for that, but we weren't ready for that. And so, you know, my thought was we got to get to the NCAA tournament. And at Division III, you know, there's only like 18 of those schools that get at-large bids. So if you don't win your league, it's not like Division I, you know, where there's 40 at-large bids. And so I just wanted to put together the toughest schedule in the country and just assumed we would win games and get to the NCAA tournament, win a national championship, and things are going to be great, right? And, you know, so I think I've matured a little bit on the scheduling and I've gotten a little bit more cerebral in that area, recruiting more character guys. And then I think because I've had to adjust so much, I think just being more comfortable in making adjustments and kind of knowing what you want to get out of a practice or out of a team or whatever. I'm not as concrete, oh, we're doing this day and that day and that day. Now I just try to kind of have more of a pulse on our team. And so it causes you to adjust more. But I think that's probably been my biggest area of growth as a head coach.
I'm guessing that flexibility comes from confidence of having been through experiences and sort of understanding, hey, I can make an adjustment here and we can still move forward, or we can even maybe advance beyond what we might have with my original plan as you start looking at things. I'm guessing that confidence has a big role in that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. I want to wrap up with one final two-part question. So part one is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two, when you get out of bed in the morning and you think about being the head coach at Emory and Henry, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Yeah. So I think the biggest challenge for us is the transition to Division II. And really the league we're going into is really closer to a Division I league. And so last year we had two scholarships. This year we have four. Next year we'll have around six, and the following year we'll have around eight. And we're in a league where almost everybody has 8 to 10. So, you know, that transition and trying to figure out how to try to be successful with maybe less resources than what other schools have is the biggest challenge. For me, the biggest joy is getting to be around our guys and just seeing how many of them and how the program has just grown. When we got here 3-4 years ago, whatever it was, You know, I think the team GPA was like a 2.2, and they'd had some success on the court. You know, I think we've done a good job of our team GPA last year was like a 3.3. So we've done a lot better in the classroom. In the community, we're doing one community service project every month. You know, our guys are involved on campus. They're around. People love our guys. The community loves our team. You know, they're not perfect. They make mistakes. But, you know, for the most part, we have a group of guys that do the right things, that love one another, that love and have embraced the community and campus. I mean, people light up when they see our guys. And it's just a cool, cool thing to see. We started to have some success on the court. And so obviously that's important, but I just love how integrated into the community our guys are and how revered they are, not because they won a national championship, but because of who they've become as young men. To me, that brings me the greatest joy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great stuff. And I think when you start talking about being able to use the game of basketball that you love to be able to have that kind of impact and help your players to grow, not just on the basketball court, but off and integrate and become the kind of people that they want to become and that you want them to become. That to me is what it's all about. Before we get out, Ben, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, find out more about you and your program, whether you want to share social media, email, website, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, we're obviously on the internet at gowasps.com. Twitter, our team handle is EHCMBB on Twitter and Instagram. I think my Twitter is Coach BP Thompson. My email is bthompson@ehc.edu, which is also on our website. So people can feel free to reach out or DM or email or whatever works for them. Be happy to hear from anybody.
Perfect. Ben, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule this morning to jump on with us. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. 3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.